Peter Greenberg, I'm glad that you are in front of a microphone with us today in the studios at WGN Radio. Welcome again to Chicago.
And happy to be with you, John. It's always fun to be back in Chicago, even in the rain.
So often when we hear you on Saturdays, you are, and we're going to hear you Saturday night at 6 o'clock, you give the longitude and latitude because you travel the world and file these reports. Is your show going to emanate from Chicago then this week?
No, the show this week is actually, I'm not going to tell you. You have to tune in to listen. What are you talking about? But it's not going to be from Chicago, although I will be in Chicago this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because you're here for the show. Just talk about the show you're in town for.
Yeah, I'm speaking at the annual Travel and Adventure Show up at the Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. I'll be speaking tomorrow at 12:45 and again on Sunday. And what we're talking about is everything the travel industry doesn't want you to know. I'm assuming people who are listening to me now love to travel, but we don't like getting beaten up. We don't like getting abused. We don't like getting hosed in our wallet. And so we're going to talk about some very specific issues, whether it's airplanes, trains, cruise ships, rental cars, you name it. That's what we're talking about.
So tips, if you will, hacks or whatever?
Absolutely. I mean, basically, we're going to talk about how to beat the travel providers at their own game, playing by their rules.
It doesn't sound very friendly, Peter.
It's consumer friendly, John.
What are you thinking about? What are you hearing today after the crash in Washington yesterday?
Well, on a much sadder note, John, I've been covering this story till slightly after 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. And having covered so many of these investigations over the years as an investigative reporter, going back, by the way, to May 25th, 1979, right here in Chicago, the American Airlines 191, you know, what people need to realize is that the investigators have a tough job. And they do an amazing job at the NTSB, and they have to first rule every single thing out before they can rule any one thing in. And that's what they're doing now. So there's no rush to judgment here, although there's things that we already do know. We do know that it's the most heavily restricted airspace in the country is at Reagan. That goes back to 9/11, of course, because of their proximity to the White House and the Capitol building. We all know that every major airport, whether it's O'Hare or Reagan or anywhere else in the U.S., has something called the TCA. And that stands for a terminal control area. That's a chunk of restricted airspace at that airport that no plane can fly into unless they give you permission. You're identified by your plane type, your flight number, your speed, your altitude, and your direction, so they can communicate with you and control you. Well, in this particular case, both the American Eagle flight, which is on approach to runway 33 at Reagan, and the helicopter, the Army Blackhawk, were both allowed to be in the TCA that night, and they were both in communication with the tower. But here's where it gets somewhat confusing and somewhat troubling. At one point, as the American Eagle plane is getting down to around 500 feet, he's on his final approach, he's supposed to be landing within 30 seconds, the tower calls out to the Army helicopter and says, "You've got traffic. Do you see it?" And the Army helicopter pilot says, yes, he confirms that he sees the traffic and he's maintaining separation. So as far as the controller is concerned, no problem. And moments later, of course, the helicopter smashes into that plane. What we're now learning is the possibility that when the helicopter pilot said he saw the traffic, he was looking at another plane.
Yeah.
And then the question becomes, what was he doing in that area to begin with, since it's such a congested airport?
So I've heard as much. I've also heard that maybe, and this is just speculation by some smart people out there, the air traffic controller should have been directed him more to avoid that. If he didn't see it coming, they should have given him more specific instructions. Do you have thoughts about that?
I do. Listen, there is short staffing at the FAA. It's been decades in the process. We have three air traffic control centers right now in this country that are below the 85% staff threshold, which means that they're forcing controllers to work mandatory overtime. That's the one job in the universe you don't want anybody working overtime. And in this particular case in D.C., they were down to one controller when they should have had two. And as a result, maybe, this controller wasn't paying as much attention once he got that handoff from the pilot that he'd already seen the traffic to look at his screen to see if there was a collision avoidance alarm. And we'll have to find that out in the investigation.
I read this morning that typically or ideally, at least until 9:30 in the evening, you would have two people handling these things. One would be for the aircraft, one would be for the military helicopters. One person was sent home early or wasn't there, and so this one individual is handling both kinds of aircraft. Are you hearing that also?
Oh, no, that is correct, John. You're absolutely right. And it's actually standard operating procedure that's approved by the FAA to drop down to one controller after 9:30 at night when there's less traffic, but that doesn't solve the problem. We need to figure out how to get more controllers on the job. Now, in the last FAA reauthorization bill in Congress, they actually passed the legislation that allowed the FAA to hire 1,500 new controllers, but they're not working yet. The learning curve here is steep. They're going to have to work about 18 months to 2 years before they ever let them sit at a console by themselves. So the problem is not yet solved.
Have you heard anything about the competence of all of the individuals, the two pilots, the air traffic controller? The president has thrown shade on these people, and particularly now the helicopter pilot. But we don't know that these people were bad hires, per se, do we?
Well, this is what we do know. We know that the pilots of that American Eagle plane were flying exactly where they should have been, on the exact glide slope they should have been on for a regular landing. I mean, they did nothing wrong. And let me emphasize something that advice that I would give the president and advice that I'd give myself at the same time. It's too soon in this investigation to look for fast answers or fast culprits. Everything I tell you right now is based on my preliminary research. It is not a final decision. In fact, that decision isn't mine. It's the NTSB. So I would ask the president to withhold judgment at this point, as I do. But I can tell you intuitively, based on all the years of my work covering these incidents, the competence issue here is not in question.
And even if it is a mistake of a single individual, I'm not sure in the hours while the bodies are still floating on the water, or next week for that matter, for us to find a culprit and name them and vilify them.
I agree with you. And there's one more thing, John, that people shouldn't forget. No airplane accident or crash ever happens for any one reason. Well, it's a combination of two or three reasons that in concert creates a situation that you can't recover from. And that's what the NTSB is doing now. They're looking for the probable cause. Let them do their job.
Well, and that was what I was alluding to, too. I'm glad you're here, because it seems to me like some of these are also institutional. If, for instance, the air traffic controller could have been a little more direct, but as a system, we don't have enough people in there to help that person. Maybe that person could have done a better job, but it would have helped if there were two people on the job. Similarly, it would have helped if there were two other people, or at least one other person in the helicopter, who could have spied the aircraft that they were about to collide in. But they were short one person in the helicopter. So I don't know about the staffing there, but it seems to me like individuals could have saved the day, but it's not fair to put all of the blame on individuals as well.
Couldn't agree more.
All right.
Yeah. I mean,
how long do these things take then? When do you think we get a report on this?
Well, the NTSB has already made an announcement that they're going to issue a preliminary report within 30 days. But remember, it's only a preliminary report. The usual length of time for an accident investigation is anywhere from 9 months to 2 years. Because remember, they have to painstakingly rule every single thing out before they can rule any one thing in. That takes time. We have 12 to 14 different what we call go teams right now, forming on engineering, manufacturing, engine performance, human factors, air traffic control, weather, fuel. And every one of these teams has to dissect everything. And on the human factors, even though it sounds a little insensitive, this happens on every accident, they're going to look at, were the pilots happily married? How were their financial situations? Did they have a drinking problem? I mean, was there anything there that could have led to this problem? I think they're going to come up empty on that, but the thing is they have to go through that process. It's done on every single incident.
One last thing about this, and then we'll take a break, and I'll ask you just a little bit more about some of those smart pieces of advice you're going to give people in Chicago tomorrow. But about these hires, why have we allowed the control towers to be understaffed?
Well, we got to go back about 44 years for that one, John, because it goes back to when Ronald Reagan fired the air traffic controllers en masse back in 1981. They were replaced by military controllers who did an excellent job. But here's where the FAA fell down. They didn't account for the fact that 20 years later, they would be retiring. How about that concept? And they didn't factor in attrition rates, retirement rates. They never planned to hire in advance so that you had enough in the learning curve to be able to fill those slots without lag time. And we've never caught up. This is the fault of Congress for not allocating the proper resources. And it's also the fault of the FAA for not making it much more of a priority.
I think we all understand that that's a really stressful job. I wonder what the work conditions are, what the pay is, how attractive is it for somebody to go into that position?
You know what? The pay is reasonably good, but you couldn't pay me enough to do that job in terms of the stress that's involved. I mean, you're looking at a board. Have you ever seen one of these consoles? And forget the movies that you've seen. They have to make split-second decisions over a wide space of air, telling these pilots where to go, where not to go, and basically this is a ballet I do not want to direct. So when you're asking them to work overtime, that's a recipe for failure. We need to fix that.
Wonder if this is a thing that artificial intelligence is going to fix or help or make
not.
Worse.
I hope not.
Or make worse. Peter Greenberg's in the house. Lucky us, the CBS News travel editor. He hosts our Eye on Travel. You'll hear him Saturday nights on WGN or at some point on weekends. This weekend at 6 to 8 p.m. Saturday. And he's at the Rosemont Convention Center. What's the hours you're going to be on stage over there, Peter?
Tomorrow I'm speaking from, I think, 12:30 to 1:30. And, of course, answering everybody's questions. So I'll be there for a while, I hope.
Give me a tip. So what's one thing that I would not know to do to make my travel less expensive or more efficient?
Okay, you go to make a reservation online, which, by the way, is your first mistake. shall we go there? But anyway, you go to make a reservation online, and you see a flight number of your favorite airline, but it's got four digits. What does that mean? And that's where you get into trouble, because it's not operated by that airline. It's a code share. Going from a different terminal, different equipment.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. And in many cases, for the same flight on the same plane, different price.
Really? I have gone to the wrong terminal. Like it would say British Air operated by or something like that.
Yeah.
And I have been in the, now I got to get back on a tram and hurry over somewhere else.
Correct. But it's worse than that because the problem is connecting. And the problem is, will they connect your bags if you're changing airports? It's a very strange deal right now with airlines getting rid of a lot of their interline agreements. So we're going to talk about that, too, because that can destroy your entire trip before you ever leave the airport.
Do you want me to call then the airline directly?
No, because you're put on hold until 1905, and that's going back in time. No, the bottom line here is we do have to have a conversation, but I'm a huge fan of going to a travel agent or a travel advisor. Now, I'm not telling you not to research online. Absolutely do that. But if you want to know about the entire inventory, you have to have that conversation. Because when you go to an online travel agent, whether it's Expedia, Travelocity, Orbitz, any one of those guys, you're not seeing the full inventory. You're only seeing the inventory they've been given by the travel provider. How many times, John, have you gone online to see only three seats left or only two rooms left? And I better get it. It's a lie. It's only three seats left in the allocation they were given by the travel provider. There may be so many open seats on that plane, you can go bowling on it. You just got to figure out who's going to tell you the truth.
You don't think the best prices are on Travelocity or Expedia?
Oh, I know they're not. And in fact, that applies to hotels especially. And it's not just the best prices, it's the best routing. What I'm going to talk about tomorrow, here's a teaser for you. Secret flights you didn't know existed. And they're published, but you don't know where, I'm going to tell you, and you get better service and better deals. And they're on airlines you've heard of, but never guess that they fly the routes, I'm going to tell you.
I was, I'm contemplating flying out to Arizona in March, and I thought, well, that's a bad time to go because however good it would be to be in Arizona in March instead of Chicago, it's going to be very expensive. And I was amazed at how expensive it was, even knowing that. For Brenda and I to go out there and come back. I called a travel agent. I called Sue Kelly, and she did find better prices for me.
Yeah.
But it was also still pretty expensive to go to Arizona in March.
It's relative, but I'll tell you something else. Right now, domestic airfares from many major cities in this country are more expensive than flying to Europe.
Yeah, I should just tell my brother to meet me in France.
You'll both save money, and you'll have a nice meal.
and you'll be in France. Seriously, though, I mean, I guess it's kind of logical, right? If you are going south in the winter, it's more expensive. If you're going north in the summer, it's more expensive like that.
Yes, but we're dealing now with seasonality that no longer plays into the game. Right now, I just did a cruise to prove the point. In December, in the Mediterranean, at a time when cruise ships never go there, the price was unbelievably low. We had the greatest time. We weren't standing in line for anything. Mm. Right? We got better service. And why wouldn't you want to do that? Unless you want to go get a suntan, and you can do that right here in Chicago. Just go to Lincoln Park and lay out in the grass.
Talk about the cruise business right now. What's going on there?
It's exploding. I'll give you a question here, John. Back in the days of the Love Boat, how many ports of call were there that cruise ships called on?
Places cruise ships would go?
Yeah, you know what the answer is?
50, I don't know, 22?
Seven. And by the way, four of them were in Nassau.
Wow.
So, you know how many there are today?
1,400. Yeah.
The cruise ship business is exploding, and to give you an idea of how much it's exploding, it's only the beginning of February, starting tomorrow. The cruise industry has already sold 70% of their entire inventory for 2025 already.
Yeah, I believe that. We're doing a river cruise, again, in conjunction with Kelly Cruises, to Portugal. And we announced that last year. And I think there's like two cabins left in the lower grade. It just, boom, went away like that.
Absolutely. And the good news is about the cruise business is during the pandemic, the shipyards were not idle. They were producing ships of every size and pedigree, so it doesn't have to be the 8,000-passenger behemoths. It's also the smaller 100-passenger ships that can go to ports that no other ships can get into, so you have so many more options now than you ever did.
What are you hearing about the cities that don't want the ships?
Well, you know, it's a double-edged sword. They need the revenue. You know, they can't survive without it. Travel and tourism is the largest industry in the world. So what they're doing is they're changing the seasonality. Why do you think we took a cruise in December to Barcelona? You're seeing that happening, and you're also seeing something that's brilliant. They're doing a moratorium. They'll only allow one ship in the harbor in any one day in some of these locations like Dubrovnik or Bermuda. And it's a win-win for the cruise ship passengers, and it's a win-win for the people who actually live in those destinations. They're not overrun by crazy people.
What's the popular destination right now? What's the hot locale?
Well, the hot new locale out there right now are the Kimberleys. You know where they are?
No.
Northwestern coast of Australia, almost best accessible by ship.
So you sail from
Perth.
Somewhere?
Perth.
Oh, I see. Fly down there and then you get
and sail north. Yeah.
Cruise these islands.
Huh? Unbelievable. It's the entire coast. It's brilliant.
Really? You like that? Have you done that one?
I have. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Have you been on this new mega ship that's out there?
The Icon of the Seas?
Yeah.
You know what? I got in trouble once on CBS when I went online and when I went on the air and I said, this ship's so large, it's got a high crime area on board. But to tell you the truth, it does work for so many people who look at the ship as a destination in and of itself. It's got so many things to do on that ship that when you talk to people who come off the ship and ask them how they enjoyed their trip and where they went, they only tell you what they did on the ship.
I'm just now catching up with some of the questions. Can Peter explain the visa requirements for traveling to Europe?
Yes, I can. Right now, if you want to go to the United Kingdom, you need an electronic visa. It's called an ETA. It's going to cost you about $13. You have to apply for it online at least 72 hours before you get your ticket, because when you get your ticket, they're going to ask you for that electronic visa number. In the rest of Europe, it's something called an ETIAS, and that's going to kick in supposedly around the 25th of April. It'll cost you about $10, but that's for every European Union country. I think that's either 26 or 27 countries.
I have TSA PreCheck, but sometimes the line is just as long as the regular one. Is it worth it to renew?
What I do is I get clear, which gets you to the front of the TSA PreCheck line.
Do you like Global Entry?
I swear by it. It's the one government project that actually works like a charm. Who wants to be on a plane for 11 hours to spend 2 hours in a customs and immigration line?
Brendan and I have had it, and it's a godsend when you get off that
plane. It's the best thing going. Yeah, you have to apply for it. You have to do an interview. It's good for 5 years. And by the way, when you get it, they give you a pre-check as well. So it's a win-win.
That's Global Entry. And one last quick one. What's the best way to rent a car at the airport?
Don't. No, you're paying a surcharge that you don't want to pay. Take a cab into town or a shuttle bus to a local hotel, rent it locally. You can always return it to the airport. You'll save a lot of money.
Peter Greenberg's going to be at the Rosemont tomorrow. Did you say 12:30, sir?
12:30 to 1:30 tomorrow and again on Sunday afternoon.
Big travel show there. I'm glad you're in town.